It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here on 77 WABC in the New York, New Jersey metro area and around the world at WABCbizradio.com. Well, as our listeners know, this show is all about you. We seek out and interview C-level executives and business leaders from all types of industries and ask them the questions that are on your mind. Stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business to gain incredible business advice and strategies to get you ahead in today's business world. Special thank you to Pesach Tropper, the show's producer, Meira Bauman, the show's content creator, Cirilli Saflis, who handles the technical side of things for the show, and the entire team at Bottom Line Marketing Group, who plays such an important, vital role in the production of Mind Your Business. Also, special thank you to last week's guest, Eric Asimov, the chief wine critic of the New York Times. A lot of incredible advice on when you go out to dinner with a colleague on how wine plays a role. What about wine as a gift? His recommendations, and you can imagine the chief wine critic at the New York Times would have some pretty good advice on the matter. And you can catch that entire interview and all our past interviews by going to the dedicated website for this show, WABCbizradio.com, WABCbizradio.com. On there, you'll be able to catch the past interviews that we had. What about the one we had with Bill O'Reilly? That was a number of months back. I mean, there were like 40 episodes. We had Ron Carucci, the author of Rising to Power, The Journey of Exceptional Executives. What about Jeffrey Hazlett, David Meerman Scott, David Yale, Sylvia DiGisto, Josh Moore, the general manager at Uber, Stephen Aldridge, senior vice president at GoDaddy, Peter Shankman, the list goes on, Captain Sully Sullenberger. We had some incredible guests, and of course, tonight is no different. With us on location, special studio here in Midtown Manhattan, I have none other than Paul Massey, president of New York Investment Sales at Cushman & Wakefield. Some background about a very distinguished guest. Paul was the co-founder of Massey Nackel Realty, a full-service brokerage firm with more than $5 billion in annual sales. In 2014, Cushman & Wakefield acquired Massey Nackel, and Paul became president of New York Investment Sales at Cushman & Wakefield. Paul received the Real Estate Board of New York's, this is a special award here, the Lewis Smedback Memorial Broker Recognition Award, and many other accolades, and some we'll get to in tonight's broadcast. Therefore, we encourage you to stay tuned for tonight's edition of Mind Your Business. We are guaranteed to walk away with real takeaways on understanding the New York real estate market, how to survive and grow during turbulent times, and the future in general of New York City. With that intro, we give a very warm welcome to Paul Massey. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Fantastic. Yitzhak, thanks for having me, and hello to your audience. I hear you've got a big one.
Well, thank you so much, and it's a real treat to land someone of your stature. As president of New York Investment Sales in a global, real estate services from Cushman & Wakefield, who hasn't heard of Cushman & Wakefield? What's your advice on spotting a great real estate deal?
The New York City market is a fantastic, very big, very dynamic market. But it's interesting. You more make a great investment than you spot one. You've got to find a property and an area and a market that you're passionate about. But then you've got to roll up your sleeves and do the work to make the property great. Almost every property is sold with a potential upside, re-tenant, reposition, release. There are opportunities with every property, but the real successful ones are the ones that where people roll up their sleeves and dig in and add value.
Now let's talk about your general knowledge of New York. I mean, each neighborhood has its own uniqueness to it, has different ethnicities. How did you learn the new? I mean, you're doing New York real estate for what, 3 decades?
Yeah, the company where we started was very big on focus on what type of brokerage activity you're involved with, sales, leasing, industrial, retail, office, mm-hmm. whatever it was, but very specific. They wanted us to very specifically dig in, but they also wanted us to dig in geographically. They wanted us to not be somewhat familiar with the whole city, but they wanted us to be experts in a specific submarket, which made all the sense in the world so that you could know trends and comparable sales and rents and zoning and everything that happened in that market, which there was simple genius in that. So we believe that investors or real estate people should really focus on one specific submarket, and then that puts them in a position to really do great things, add value, create value in properties. So we ended up doing something that was novel at the time 30 years ago, but we started out in Manhattan, and anyone who knows Manhattan knows it's very dense. We put a broker every 15 blocks, but that turned out there turned out to be simple genius in that, because every 15 blocks had about 1,000 buildings or 40 or 50 annual sales. So, you know, a significant number of investment opportunities. But then we filled up Manhattan. And so, you know, what do you do next? We decided that we would go outside Manhattan. Instead of getting in a different business, we went into Queens, and Manhattan has 24,000 buildings. Queens, it turns out, had 55,000. We got brave. We went into Brooklyn. Before Brooklyn was Brooklyn, we got there early through a stroke of luck. And it was fantastic. So as it turns out, where there are a lot of property in Manhattan, 24,000 properties south of 96th Street, but there are 188,000 buildings in New York City. So it really is a big, fantastically big, dynamic market. But we have people working in every neighborhood, every submarket, teams. They're involved with the community. They're community involved in a good way. So that's our secret.
So it's walking the pavement. It's not just, I mean, let's say in today's environment where you got Google, could you just rely on all that new media, or you got to really?
Yep. We have, you know, we're constantly telling our young people in training, look, every time you walk your neighborhood, you will bump into, find, trip over a business opportunity. You'll see something that tips you off. And it never fails. Every time you're out walking in your market, you're going to learn something that benefits you.
Now, we'll go back to something you answered in the previous question. You talked about a stroke of luck, and in preparation for this interview, you've shared some of that in the past. Perhaps you could share that story with the audience. Again, there are a lot of small business owners, and they're inspired when they hear about how, you know, things happen. We just got to do our best, and then boom, something. That stroke of luck. Could you share an example of that?
Yeah. One of the things that we did early was focus on these geographic areas, and it just gave our business a coordinated effort. Right. Another great thing about our market was, or our structure was, that none of the agents were competing with each other. So they were all a team. It only mattered where the property was. So somebody brought in a business opportunity, they shared with the person, you know, who worked in that neighborhood or that geography. So it made our, you know, and I've never worked for any period of time at another real estate firm, so I don't know, but I hear stories about, you know, people competing internally and how uncomfortable that is. But we developed this structure where we had a sharing mechanism between our producers, so it made them a team. It made them rooting for their neighbor. The stronger your neighbor was, the better off you were. They were developing business for each other. And it was a collegial team, so it was a very, very strong work environment. We happened upon that by accident, and it's been great.
Wow. When did Massey Knackle form as its own independent company?
So we worked at CBRE for 5 years. Fantastic launch, wonderful people. We left there in 1988. My partner, I started the business with Bob Knackle. He was 26, I was 28. We probably were too young to know any better. So we were stubborn young kids, and so we launched back then. That's 28 years ago.
Wow. Now, for someone looking to start a career in real estate, is there any particular recommendations? We know there's buying, selling, mortgages. Do you have any particular, or does it depend on the individual?
You know, I love that question because young people, people new to the industry, come to us very frequently, and they're quizzing us about which geography should I be interested in? What specialty should I be interested in? Do I want to be an investment sales broker? Do I want to be a mortgage broker? Do I want to be a commercial leasing broker? And it really has to be a decision they make. In order for you to succeed, you have to be passionate about what you're doing. And in order to be passionate about what you're doing, you have to have some interest in that. So any company that's going to direct you at something they sell, they're interested in, might not be what you're interested in. So we always believe it needs to be a mutual decision that the company is interested in having you focus on, but you also are focused on it. So we never force that issue. We always try to accommodate someone's own passions or own interests. Maybe it's you want to work in the neighborhood where you live. Maybe you have an interest in a certain type of property. We just went with that. We help people get involved with what they wanted to be involved with, and that worked. That's really the way it's got to be.
And it's a great point. One of the previous guests on Mind Your Business was Julia Waller. She's a specialist in unique ability, and which really touches on the answer you gave. And naturally, there has to be a certain love or affinity or passion for the work someone does, but also has to factor in how God hardwired them. Because if they're just forced into a situation, then they'll try, but they'll grind. It's just not going to be a healthy situation long term. My guest here this evening is Paul Massey, president of New York Investment Sales at Cushman & Wakefield. Let's move on. I mean, this it's really a treat to have someone of your stature and knowledge here on Mind Your Business. What are the nuances of real estate between the different states? Let's focus even on the Eastern Seaboard. I mean, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts. You're from, if I'm not mistaken, you're from Boston?
I am. I'm from Dedham, Mass., one town south of Boston.
Wow. So maybe let's talk about real estate in the Northeast.
Yeah, I think every submarket is going to be different and have different dynamics, different rents, and different tenants. So I think it gets back to what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, basically I know about the metro area. That's the extent of my limited knowledge.
The full five boroughs?
Five boroughs, Westchester, Long Island, and New Jersey. So we truly are have a lot of activity in all parts of the New York metro area. But beyond that, you know, it's unknown to me. But I do spend time in other major markets. I spend time in Boston, and my family's still there. I volunteer there at my old high school. So I'm in the market at least once a month. And I've traveled around now for Cushman & Wakefield looking at other major submarkets. So I've seen them. I think there are some dynamics that can be different and unusual, but there are some fundamental dynamics that are really the same. If you think about investment property and you simplify it, anytime some of our young people come to us and they've got they're scratching their head, they've got a puzzle, they're trying to figure out a property, they're trying to figure out a dynamic on a property. A property is revenue in, rents collected, and expenses paid, and what you're left with is the net income, and that's what people measure the productivity. That's how people measure the productivity of the property. So no matter how complicated it gets, we coach our people to get back to that fundamental revenue in, expenses out. Expenses are typically half real estate taxes. So real estate taxes are an extremely important dynamic in almost every property. And that goes from state to state. That works the same way. And your ability to borrow against the property is limited to what the net income of the property is. So that's a critical dynamic as well. But boil it down to those basics. Get comfortable with those basics. Understand your real estate taxes. Understand the fundamental operating expenses. And you'll be on the road to successfully creating value in real estate.
And it's a great point. One of our previous guests was Peter Shankman, and he had a great line. He wrote, "Be brilliant at the basics."
Mm-hmm.
And as we're hearing from Paul Massey, how important it is. You know, obviously there's some level of depth to any relationship, to any deal. We understand that. But when someone loses, you know, they kind of go off the rails on the basics, then you just can wind up, I guess, in a territory, in a zone you really don't want to wind up.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I also think trust your instincts. You know, what your gut instinct is first about a property or a tenant or a situation. People are right most of the time. Don't outthink yourself too much. Just go for it.
So you like the idea, go with your gut?
Absolutely. I think people are very smart. People are very, especially when it comes to your financial success, everybody pays attention.
Maybe we could talk about any disruptors in the real estate industry today. And I mean, we're fast forwarding, we're 2016, there's technology. Anything that is either at the present or on the horizon that's a disruptor?
Now, the minute I say this, I know I'm probably going to be wrong, but I don't really foresee, I don't see a significant disruptor out there. And I'll tell you why I don't. Every property has 60 to 70 key variables. Size, location, tenancy, ownership, zoning, whatever it is, there are so many variables that you really should be watching for with real estate. I don't think there's a way to commoditize commercial real estate the way that the residential side of the game has been commoditized or other businesses have been commoditized. I think all the disruptors, if you will, especially on the technology side for real estate, have been additive. They've made the business go faster. Everything you can think about, public data sources, property analysis programs, anything that's been introduced to our business over the last 30 years had just made things move faster, and that just makes it more efficient, more exciting. But I wouldn't consider any of them disruptors in either a negative sense or in an upending sense. I think they've all just been really positive.
So it's a fascinating point. So that real estate is real estate, any way you slice it. However, the new technology has just kind of fast-tracked, if you will, some of the processes.
Yep. They've allowed people to know more and know faster, but not to the point of eliminating the need for experts in every area.
Now, whether it was through Massey Nackel or beforehand at Coldwell, you've been through some rough economies. I mean, many of us that have been out there for a while, and late 90s, certainly early 2000s, and of course the 2007, 2011. Maybe you could share with the audience any tips, advice, how to hold on during a downturn.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to know and understand. We have been through several ups and downs, but two major recessions, a recession in the early 1990s when we were younger and probably didn't have the scale of a business that we had a smaller business, so it was easier to wrestle with slower velocity. The most recent recession in 2007, 2008, and heading into 2009 was really rough. We had a much bigger business, much bigger overhead, and we really had a tough time. I think anybody who is glib or gives you a cliche about a recession and said, well, it's great, it makes you stronger, you know, I'm sorry. Recessions they stink. It's bad. It's rough on everybody. And people tend to forget, too. If you really are looking back in an honest way, almost everybody suffers in a recession. So you should accept that. We had a huge downdraft in the velocity of our business. So we're kind of like the toll taker on a highway. And, you know, if 100 cars were going through our tolls an hour, 80 of them disappeared. So 80% of our business vanished, and our overhead was significant. So we did some smart things. We cut our overhead in half, which was hurtful. We actually had to let, you know, a handful of people go who weren't mission critical, and that killed us. We had never done that before. But we significantly cut our overhead so we could ride through. We We were a brokerage, a building sales company, but we used to make these big fancy books that, to market our property. And I think we had about a $3 million bookmaking bill every year. So you could argue we were a bookmaking company, not a brokerage company. And we said, well, it could risk our market presence, but let's go on the internet. Let's try and go exclusively online. So we cut our bookmaking bill from $3 million to $250,000. And it's hard to prove the negative, but I think that, we didn't hurt our market presence at all. And, we probably are, a little bit old school, but we came out of that recession saving, close to $3 million a year. We would have figured out we could do that at some point, but that might have been a few years later. So right. I think we saved millions of dollars. We also brought everyone in the room in the classic lifeboat style and said, look, look around. We made our cuts. We're not making any more cuts. We're either going to struggle through or there's going to be a bad outcome, but no more layoffs. Oh, and by the way, no more raises and bonuses for the next 2 years. And people were wonderful. They reacted really well. We struggled through, and it was a good outcome. But
what's so fascinating here is that you have a great reputation. You're very approachable, but yet at the same time, you kind of know how to. You have to make tough decisions, but that's why the company survived.
Well, we were very transparent, and a positive lesson out of a recession, again, I underscored, it's not fun for anybody, and it's really hard. But one of the things, the big takeaway from the most recent recession was recessions begin and recessions end. And you can easily forget that when you're in the depths of a recession.
Oh.
But we know it began, and we knew it was going to end. And this time around, we knew when it was ending, and we were right. So we started throwing gasoline on the business, and we doubled our business as we came out of the recession because we had confidence in the market. We had faith in ourselves. So I think that's the big one. If you always want to be prepared for really tough times, but look at those tough times as an opportunity to come out the other side and really drive your business.
We're speaking with Paul Massey, president of New York Investment Sales at Cushman & Wakefield. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Did you know that dissatisfied employees cost American businesses over $300 billion each year? Now there's a solution. TeamAhead.co. TeamAhead is a complete solution to help companies of all sizes build a positive corporate culture. TeamAhead helps today's thought leaders make their vision a legacy. Team Ahead's comprehensive approach helps you communicate your vision and engage your employees through many channels, including print, digital, sweepstakes, video, events, social media, and a custom website. Call 800-890-1807, extension 3505 to find out how Team Ahead can transform your business's corporate culture, leading to greater productivity and revenue. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co. Team Ahead will enhance your workplace productivity, boost morale, and successfully communicate your vision. Don't let your company's strongest asset be its biggest liability. Call toll-free 800-890-1807, extension 3505, or visit teamahead.co to fuel your winning workplace today.
Author, radio host, and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis, has written the essential book for the success-driven, fast-paced professional. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is a must-read for marketing your business and building your personal brand. Former U.S. Congressman and media executive Bob Turner describes So, What's the Bottom Line? As a compass to guide the experienced executive or marketing novice through any step in planning or organizing a selling strategy. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. Get your copy today.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile friendly? And does it have the 2016 look? Well, look no further than websitewithbrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500 or visit websitewithbrains.com.
And we're back on Mind Your Business here with Yitzhak Saftlis on 77 WABC and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. We're here with Paul Massey, president of New York Investment Sales at Cushman & Wakefield. And he was really gracious to give up his precious time to share the real estate industry, New York. We're going to get into quite a bit. If I may, and we did the research, I mean, you're quite, you have a lot of talent. If I understand correctly, you were a boxer?
Yeah.
Talk about it. I mean.
I wrestled in college, and I actually did Taekwondo karate for 20 years, and my great Taekwondo instructor retired, and so I was looking for something else to do, and I always was curious about boxing, and I've been boxing for 10 years, and I get 3 or 4 great workouts a week. And
oh man,
it's a great cardio sport. It's to me, it's about the cardio. Get a great
Stay
workout,
fit.
Feel good. Yeah, it's very, very challenging. Try holding your arms above your shoulders for a minute or two and see how you're feeling.
Uh-oh. We're on the air here, and these 50,000 listeners are going to start bugging me about this. But now I understand how you stay in great shape. I mean,
yeah, it's.
I have a ways to go. But I did have Jenna Wolf on a couple of weeks ago, and she gave me some jabs. She wrote the book Thinner in 30, and she challenged me on the air. And yes, yes, everyone's been bugging me. And yes, I am officially losing weight. I don't look like Paul yet, but
you look great.
Thank you.
It's whatever it is
thank
working.
That's my wife. Let's get back to real estate. I mean, how could someone? You touched on this before, but. Let's talk about the customer service angle. How could someone in the real estate field, ensure that his clients are getting really great value and a great experience, great working experience, if I may?
Yeah, yeah. Client experience is critical. It's anyone can tell you that about a service business, but I think the key to the client experience is a disciplined approach. In our business, we're marketing a property, and job one is usually to sell the property for the most money that you can. But the road to that success is a path, and the path is filled with things that you have to do to market a property and bringing, basically conducting a controlled auction. So you need a crescendo of interest in the property, and the way to do that is outreach, maximum exposure for the property. We believe in that a property should be fully marketed, because we could tell you who the top buyers are in a market, but you know, we don't know everything, and there might be someone with a 1031 tax-free exchange or someone who just lost out on a property. So we try and not be too smart, but we try and create an intense crescendo around the marketing of a property. And that's a lot of work, and that's a lot of discipline, and it's a lot of reporting to the client. So being disciplined about your marketing efforts is really the key, and obviously the outcome of maximum proceeds for the client.
Now, as a veteran of the New York real estate field, what's your projection on New York real estate?
Very, very positive. We're probably in a small lull right now. I think prices have gone up quite significantly over the past 6 or 7 years. And some people are arguing we're at a pause point. I think that two fundamental things are happening which signal to me that the market's going to stay healthy and stable. One is that our interest rates are still historically low.
Yeah.
And, that's critical. The other one is that financing's available. And so I think, the general economy is good as well. So I think things are going to be looking good for real estate in the near term.
Now, once we're talking about New York real estate, let's talk about New York in general. You've been working the turf for 3 decades. You've seen the city under Mayor Giuliani, Mayor Bloomberg. Care to comment on that?
Yeah, we talked about the fact that I'm from Boston, and
yeah.
The reason I'm in New York is that the Boston office of Coldwell Banker Commercial at the time, now CBRE, was a mature office. They had one opening, and they weren't going to give that opening to a college kid. They said I had done a nice job for them. I worked for them when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I was crushed because I loved the company and I loved the industry. I had found what I really wanted to do. And they said, well, that's the bad news. The good news is that we just opened up brand new in New York City and they'll take anybody down there. So being so qualified, I came to New York. But my battle plan was come here for a year or two and then head home. And I think it took me about 6 weeks and I was fully in love with New York. I loved my career. I loved the city. Eventually, I met my wife and we had our kids. So here I still am. And I am a huge fan of New York City. I love it here. I think that a lot of us are maybe, you know, a lot of us can remember the way things were in New York when I was a young person here. And crime was a major issue. There were over 2,200 murders a year. There was graffiti all over the place. It was Times Square was not what it is now. It was a, you know, a really rough place.
Sure. Subway's a mess.
Squeegee men were washing your windshield, sure, whether you liked it or not. It was just so much. And the two mayors over the last 20 years, Giuliani for 8 and Bloomberg for 12, showed such great leadership. Giuliani took the city and took City Hall and organized it with CompStat and started looking at each one of his divisions like essentially like they were a business and created great performance. The people who worked for the city started feeling better about themselves. And I think Michael Bloomberg continued that and probably amazingly improved on even the great things that Mayor Giuliani did. So we've had 20 years of leadership, but right now I am a little concerned about where we're headed. I'm getting these feelings of potentially we're moving back to some of that stuff that I vividly remember from being a young person, and I'm concerned.
So now a couple of years into the Blasio administration, you have some reservations. I mean, where the city's heading?
Well, I'm at an inflection point with our business, so I'm thinking about other things. We sold our business to Cushman & Wakefield, who was who was a great company.
2014?
To December 2014. They're wonderful people. We've assimilated into their business in a very, very good way. But it's a serious inflection point. So I'm thinking, you know, what's in store for the future for me? And I'm thinking a little outside the box. I was always trained at, in Boston, and both from my family and at my high school, that public service is an important thing. So I'm looking ahead. I formed a political action committee called One New York Together, and I really the purpose of that is to foster a dialogue about New York City. I really don't think we're talking about New York City enough right now, and I really want to have an educational forum for myself in a way, but for everybody else who wants to be involved, about what are the fundamental issues that New York should be focusing on right now. What is the vision for New York? I think people have a sense of pride. If you're a New Yorker and you travel away from New York and you meet someone and they ask you where you're from and you say you're from New York, I feel like we puff out our chests a little bit. We have an immense pride in our city. But I don't want to lose that. I think we need to maintain the pride. And this is not a national conversation in any way, but woe be our country if New York weren't the financial capital of our country and would not end up as the cultural capital of our country and just really all in all being the greatest city that I know.
Now, it's interesting. You just touched on something that maybe many of our listeners didn't know about this political action nonprofit that you launched. I mean, you touched on it, but maybe you could further elaborate. Like, what got it? I mean, you're a busy person. You're running a major division of Cushman & Wakefield. What issues bother you that you felt the need to launch this?
Well, I think we all agree that some form of public service is a critical thing and an important thing. And if we have that, I think we'll maintain great cities and a great, you know, democratic system that we have. But the things that I think about are safety. Okay. I would throw homelessness into that category as well because I think it's linked. I think we have to have a safe city. And that's what Mayor Giuliani started, and that's what we still have. But there are cracks in that program. And I think the police department have to know that they have our support in a real way, and they need to do their job in an appropriate way. But we really need our police force, which is probably one of the greatest police forces in the world, to know that we're supporting them.
Yeah, I mean, you look back over the last 2-3 years, and the relationship with City Hall, it's been, all-time low is probably the best way to put it. I mean,
it's disturbing, and I think it worries everybody. I think we want to be a safe place, and without that, it's a non-starter. I think another thing that's critical is that, let me say it this way. You know, how can we not have the greatest school system if we're the greatest city? And I think we've struggled with that. Charter schools are a start to alleviate some of the pressure on public schools, but we really need to look at all our schools. And there's no one size fits all. There's no, every community wants to have school a little bit their way, and that's right. That's what should happen. Every community should have a say in how their kids are being educated. So some autonomy there would be great, but accountability with autonomy is big. Just straightforward, are our kids learning? Are our kids happy? And, and by the way, it follows itself along. If you've got an educated population, you're going to have an educated workforce. And we want to be a great place to do business. If you're running the business of New York City, it's like any business. You can't cut to prosperity. You have to grow revenue to prosperity. So we need to attract businesses and have great infrastructure. And that's the third thing that I think about. Mm-hmm. Are we building the third water tunnel in New York City? I don't know if people realize it, but there are two very old water tunnels that are feeding all of New York City, all five boroughs. And they're 100 years old. If you stop to fix them, they might collapse and we'd be without water. It's a scary stuff. So Mayor Bloomberg initiated a third water tunnel and worked furiously to get that done. But it's not complete. And the part that's not complete is feeding Brooklyn and Queens, where 4.5 million people live. Mm. So last week in the newspaper, we're hearing we're not building it. We are building it. We don't know if we're building it. There's been miscommunication in the administration about whether we're building the water tunnel. What is it? What's the decision? Are we building it in 2030? God forbid something would happen. But it's that kind of thing that's critical, that if we're going to be a great city, we should have great infrastructure.
Mm. If I may, I want to go back to the subject of housing, especially with your knowledge in real estate.
Yeah.
There is a lack of...
That's something I feel very comfortable in understanding. You can't have a barbell. You can't have all wealthy folks and poor people. You need to take care of everybody. You need a middle class. You need people who are making a good living to be able to afford housing. Right now, they can't. And that's a major issue. Of course, we need low-income housing. You've got to have that. And it's interesting. People don't realize that our housing stock is 75 years old on average. That means we should be reinvesting in the housing stock we have. And our population is going to continue to grow. And I think that's a positive thing. But that's going to require even more housing. But it's got to be affordable. I don't know right now what our program is for affordable housing. It's very unclear. And we need to create a scenario where the real estate community and developers are creating affordable housing. And you know what? The city can't do that. The city, you don't want to be in the development business if you're a government. Right. You've got to incent people to do it. If they make profit, that's okay. That's okay. Let's get the housing built so that there's the pressure off lower-income folks and middle-income folks so that we can maintain this great place that everyone wants to be. I mean, if you're a young person, everyone wants to come to New York, but we have to keep it that way. We have to have jobs for those young people that are going to come from all over our country, and we have to have a place for them to stay.
The voice that you hear is that of Paul Massey, president of New York Investment Sales at Cushman & Wakefield. You're tuned to 77 WABC, the Mind Your Business program, and around the world at WABCBizRadio.com. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your company to the entire world. Was your website recently updated? Is it mobile-friendly? And does it have the 2016 look? Well, look no further than WebsiteWithBrains.com, the complete website solution. Call Website with Brains today at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500. Or visit WebsiteWithBrains.com. The experienced team at Website with Brains will plan, write, design, and program a stunning and informative website that combines simplicity and flexibility. Best of all, Website with Brains can have your new website up and running within 4 to 6 weeks. Get ready to look great online and take your business to the next level. See some of the attractive, user-friendly sites built by Website with Brains by visiting WebsiteWithBrains.com. Then give Website with Brains a call at 718-412-3500. That's 718-412-3500.
Author, radio host, and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis, has written the essential book for the success-driven, fast-paced professional. So, What's the Bottom Line is a must-read for marketing your business and building your personal brand. Former U.S. Congressman and media executive Bob Turner describes So What's the Bottom Line as a compass to guide the experienced executive or marketing novice through any step in planning or organizing a selling strategy. So What's the Bottom Line is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. Get your copy today.
And we're back, the Mind Your Business Show, right here on 77 WABC. In case you're just tuning in, this incredible edition of Mind Your Business will be available on the archives by going to WABCBizRadio.com, WABCBizRadio.com. And like we always talk about on the social media channels, if you follow me, you would know who our upcoming guests are and will be. We always push it out through social media. You can follow me on Twitter by going to YSaftless, that's YSAFTLAS. That's my Twitter handle. On Facebook, LinkedIn, it's my full name, Yitzchok Saftless, YITZCHOKSAFTLAS. And that's where we always release the information about our upcoming guest. Let's get back to our incredible guest. Again, Paul Massey. We're here live in studio, New York Investment Sales, at the president of New York Investment Sales at Cushman & Wakefield. You know, if I may, I hope it's okay, actually. I'm going to put you on the spot. There's been some talk, in fact, a New York Magazine story, that you may be running for mayor. Am I putting you on the spot?
Nah.
You're a boxer, I mean.
we talked earlier about this inflection point in my life, and it's caused people to initially tease me about, you know, hey, how about a new, bigger job? And I started really thinking about it. I started thinking about public service, and it's become something I'm very interested in continuing to think about. I've had some wonderful conversations and with the New York Magazine article coming out, which was a handful of wonderful people mm-hmm. saying that they're encouraging me to consider this. I've had a warm wave of support for the concept. I think people want experienced folks to really consider public service, and I think that's a very, very good thing.
But wow.
We'll see.
Yeah, because you're running a major division of Cushman & Wakefield. It's not like something that you technically need. It looks like, I mean, even the talks, is that means you got something in the in your gut, as you talked about beforehand, that you feel passionate about, and that you're even exploring it is a big statement.
I think people want vision. I think people
absolutely
want a well-run city. I talked about how proud we are of it, and I think that it's important for people to volunteer to do that.
It's a public service, and
It's
giving of your time.
It's critical.
Talent.
It's critical. What makes our country work.
Hmm. Now, in launching One New York, so if I may, I noted a quote you wrote. This isn't a tale of two cities. It's one city, and can be great for everybody. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think it gets back to the fact that we're 8.5 million people, and I talked about the fact that we want to be proud of being part of that. And I think that if you look at New York City in totality, I think everyone should be proud to be here. I'm not sure that's that people are feeling all that great right now. I think there's been a lot of dialogue about the tale of two cities. I think that's very unfortunate because it's not a tale of two cities. It's one city. And I think we all want to be part of it and all have our role in it and live in it and enjoy it. So I think something that people talk about lately, they talk about worrying about safety. They talk about our schools. They talk about worrying about our infrastructure, but they aren't talking about a vision. And a vision is, where are we going to be in 5 years? Are we going to be a greater city? There's not enough dialogue about that going on right now. And I think that's possibly what they're really missing, that their leadership is not painting a picture for them of where we want to be.
Now, I mean, moving forward, what perhaps you can comment on some of the short-term and long-term, vision ideas that you would like to share in terms of an approach that's needed so badly for the city.
Sure. A great example is, where's the next High Line being developed? Where's the next cultural hub being created? Where's the next 7-train extension happening that's helping create Hudson Yards, which is a huge, fantastic, successful development? Where's the next Roosevelt Island tech hub being developed? What are we thinking about for transportation? I mean, think of a wild, crazy idea that if you've ever heard of what's going on in Shanghai now, which is a great and vibrant city. The whole Pudong area, which is the area that is across the river from the old part of Shanghai, is developing very, very quickly, predicated on some significant infrastructure that was created with transportation in Shanghai. So what was really desolate farm area is becoming a major area of development in Shanghai now, and it's 15 years ago it didn't exist. So look at Astoria, look at Long Island City, look at Greenpoint. You see development there. You can look across the East River and see that development happening. Why couldn't we find a way to put an accelerant on that? More places for people to live, more places for people to shop. We desperately are under-retailed in the boroughs in Queens and Brooklyn. We can help with that. But a great thing about real estate development, in addition to creating homes, is that we do what I talked about before, which is creating a revenue base, increasing our tax ability to, develop more real estate taxes, to fund more social programs, to fund the schools, to fund all the things we care about. So revenue creation, a lot of people don't focus on the fact that approximately half our city's budget comes from real estate taxes. That's something I'm keenly aware of because of the business that I'm in. So if half your revenue and half your, viability come from a certain place, you ought to foster that development. And in the same way, you're making more homes for people. So it's all linked up. And if you focus on that and are creative, you can make things better for everybody.
I mean, it sounds like you've given the subject a lot of thought. I mean,
I've given New York a lot of thought for 30 years, but lately, I've had the time to really think about what is important. And
wait a second, how do you have the time? I mean, you're running a major division of Cushman & Wakefield.
Oh, you make time when things are important to you. Mm-hmm. You know how that is, and very committed to New York City.
Now, on the subject of growth in New York City, do you have any other ideas in terms of infrastructure? Any types of, across the five boroughs?
Well, there are two buckets, really. Infrastructure is preservation of what we have. That is critical. I think if you really look at some of our bridges and tunnels, they're deficient. And any organization that I've been involved with that's had facilities or infrastructure reserves for that. They project a lifetime for whatever infrastructure is involved with the organization. So they financially reserve for that. I get the feeling, or I'm pretty sure that we have radically insufficient reserves for infrastructure maintenance in New York City right now. So that's something that's deeply concerning. But things like the 7 train extension, or creation of the High Line area, those things are new things like that are just as important, and we need to be a growing and vibrant city.
So included in that would be finishing the third water tunnel, if I may.
Exactly. I think that we need to finish the third water tunnel, do maintenance on the first and second older tunnels. People don't realize how lucky we are to have the reservoir system that we have feeding New York City. Most cities struggle with this. We have a fantastic system, but yet it's been under-maintained in a way that's potentially threatening, and that's not great.
What's exciting about this interview is talking with someone who has so much knowledge in the business world, and then using that great resource and talent, experience, and applying it to helping others. It's very very noble, if I may.
Well, as I said earlier, community involvement is a critical thing. We've coached our folks to be community involved for the whole 30 years that we've been in business. So it's not new to us, but being involved on a wider scale is a new and fun thing to contemplate.
Have you, if I may, just from your long experience, is either the single most fascinating individual you've ever met, or maybe if you need 2-3 to name off, who would come to mind in your lifetime of experience? People that you've actually dealt with.
I think Michael Bloomberg has to be at the top of the list. He's a man who, we were born in the same hospital, born in the same town, so we're kind of from the same place. Created a great business. Has great values, took a job in New York City where who needed it, really? He was all set. Yeah. He could have taken a different path, but he sacrificed 12 years of his life serving the city, and that's big to me. One of the other people who I think is who I've had opportunity to get to know a little bit is Warren Buffett, and I don't worship him because he's a wealthy guy. I worship him because he's got great values. And if you, I also think he's one of our country's biggest cheerleaders. So I think he's another pretty fantastic person. And every letter he's written, I've read every word of. Every book he's written, I've read. And I think he's someone we could model ourselves after.
Wow. As we approach the close of another great edition of Mind Your Business, and in case someone tuned in just now, you'll be able to hear the entire interview by going to WABCBizRadio.com. It should be up by Tuesday morning. Paul, I can't thank you enough for joining me on this edition. As we approach the close, can you share any final insights, thoughts for the listeners of Mind Your Business?
Yeah, for any of you who are curious about One New York Together, our website is the numeral one, ny.nyc. I'd be interested in any of you who want to talk to us about our work in that organization. I think we're going to do good work. I think we're going to help New York City to the extent that any of you want to get involved. Please contact us. We're raising money to support that effort. We have ability to take unlimited donations, so we're hoping our friends and everyone who's a friend of New York City will contribute generously to that. But I would just say stay proud of New York City, whether you live in New York City or not. I think we should all be proud of New York City, and I think be willing to volunteer to make it great. I think consider public service. Consider the fact that wouldn't it be great if the young people that came to New York City came here with the hope of a great career, but also with the understanding that we expect that it would be a very good thing for them to be community involved and pitch in.
Paul, I can't thank you enough for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Thanks, and thanks to everyone who's listening, and it's been really fun to be here.
This brings to a close another great edition of Mind Your Business. Paul Massey, the president of New York Investment Sales at Cushman & Wakefield. Again, thank you so much.
Thanks.
This brings to the close a great edition of Mind Your Business. You could hear the entire interview in a couple of days by going to WABCBizRadio.com. Stay tuned for John Batchelor up next, and tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night from 11 until 12 for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night from 11 until midnight on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.